Ira, you know that Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford, presents all your work here at JoeBucksFan.com. And it's April. It is time for the spring trade-up offers through the end of this month at BillCurryFord.com. Spring is a great time for a fresh start, and the inventory is flowing. You can get a new 2020 Ford Explorer Premium. Discounted pricing, more than $14,000 of discounts, including a $9,000 Bill Curry Ford discount. Get to BillCurryFord.com. Sean Sullivan, the general manager, is ready for you. If you want to reach out through the website or on by phone or at the dealership a mile north of Raymond James Stadium, he's going to help you personally, and he loves when you tell him that Ira Kaufman sent you.
You know, Steve, my wife, she loves her 2020 Ford Escape, so she's already looking ahead down the road. We might be talking to Sean Sullivan in the near future, Steve. And how about a brand new Ford Mustang? That's right, Ford Mustang, brand new.
Now you're trying to pick up some women, Ira. I see how you're working here. I see how you're working.
Happily married, Steve. Happily married. That is not an oxymoron. It might be a moron saying it, but it's not an oxymoron.
Of course, nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles at Bill Curry Ford, BillCurryFord.com. Ira, we are fired up. We're a little more than 3 weeks away from our NFL draft party opening night, indoors and outdoors at Big Storm Clearwater on 49th Street, just south of Ulmerton Road. This Big Storm Brewery, if fans who haven't been there, we had so much fun there all through the season, packed houses through the playoffs and the Super Bowl, just great seating outside, great seating inside, and it's fully covered outdoors. A fantastic viewing, all modern, Florida's best craft beer, an amazing menu. We are so jacked up to invite fans out there starting 7 o'clock Thursday, April 29th. The Sage will be there all night long, and he'll be in a great festive mood. He's fully vaccinated. He'll even do selfies. Are you fired up, Ira?
Steve, I think this is going to be our biggest draft party, and we've had some great ones. I think there's a lot of pent-up passion towards the draft. We had to cancel ours last year. We didn't want to do it, Steve. We didn't want to cancel, but it was in the beginning stages of the pandemic, and you know, we had to be prudent about it. This year, Steve, we're ripping off the bandages, ripping off the masks. I'm fully vaccinated, and I think it's going to be a tremendous turnout. What's the difference? Well, the Bucks don't pick, you know, at 9:20. They're going to pick 11:30. So it's a party all night long. Steve, I don't know if you checked it out. I've already issued some invites. I think it's going to be a fantastic time.
Yeah, we've got some special announcements coming up with that, Ira. People are soon going to see a new television commercial for the draft party with the Sage in it. Everybody loves that. I'm sure we'll get some shots of you stuffing your face, which is always good, although you could get that any day. That's not really very special. But Big Storm Brewery, Clearwater, Florida's best craft beer, outdoors, indoors. We got prizes, giveaways, special guests. Going to be a great draft party. Thursday, April 29th. Come spend the night. Going to be a blast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Buccaneers fans, 3.5 weeks till the NFL draft, and we're fired up here on the Ira Kaufman podcast, starring the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports, the Baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford, the King of Newport Richie, Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton himself. Ira, how are you today as you sit inside your broadcast studio, also known as your 2020 Cherry Red Ford Escape from Bill Curry Ford?
Gentlemen, I don't want to get too ahead of myself in early April, but let's be realistic. You know, this was once a very, very difficult division, the NFC South. Every team was solid. New Orleans was really good. And as we sit here, you know, now with the Saints and, you know, with Jameis Winston and Carolina with Sam Darnold, and I can just hear Buck fans. Oh, wait a minute. You said the Bucs should get Sam Darnold for a third-round pick. Yeah, Lee, as a backup, not as the quarterback of the 2021 Bucks. And then you got a fading Matt Ryan, you know, fading badly. I think the Falcons don't even want him anymore, but they couldn't get much for him in a deal. So they might have to take a quarterback. My point is, Lee, here as we stand, 5 months before the bullets fly, the Bucks clearly are the best team in this division. If they don't win this division, it would be a travesty, barring a major injury to Tom Brady. That's my only out for this coaching staff and this organization. would be a major injury to Tom Brady. That's it. I'm not talking about Mike Evans missing 5 weeks and Carlton Davis missing a month and a half. No. This is by far the most talented roster in this division. The Saints are going backwards, all kinds of cap hell. They've gotten rid of more guys than they've signed, including some really good players. Winston for Breeze. I'm sorry, Lee. I don't see that as an upgrade. So the Vegas boys, I think they got New Orleans over under at 9. They got the Bucks at 11.5, Lee. 11.5. Don't forget the extra game this year. So that could mean that they go 12-5 and cover. It's all good for Buck fans right now because I think the rest of the division's going backwards.
I think you have a point there. By the way, I know the last podcast you were adamant Bucks need to trade for Darnold for backup. And over the weekend, I saw his salary. I almost had a stroke. Like, no way you pay this guy $9 million that you pray he doesn't make a snap. With the Bucks' calories, then like, who gets cut? Ali Marpet? I'm like, no way. And so I'm glad the Bucks didn't even think of getting this guy for a backup. Holy smokes. You know, $18 million next year for a backup. Woo! I don't know what to say about this division. I think I agree with you, Ira. If it's not going backward, teams are certainly stagnant. I don't know if Bridgewater's better than Darnold. I honestly don't. I'm not a huge Bridgewater fan. But look at the bullets the Bucks dodged here. You know, apparently they gave up on Jameis, overgoing rather to Brady. And if they didn't get Brady, it looked like Bridgewater was the guy. Well, now you got two teams in the same division that gave up on Bridgewater in 2 years. Whew. I dare say there would have been, the Bucks would not be defending Super Bowl champions if they would have had Bridgewater. And I don't know if they would have been a playoff team with Bridgewater. So the Bucks dodged the bullet there.
Steve, he might be destined to be a 10-year backup, Teddy Bridgewater. I'm not saying he doesn't belong in the NFL. He does. He's competent. But I don't know if he's ever going to get a job as the number one guy if he doesn't beat Darnold out. He might be destined for backup status.
Bridgewater's got to beat out Darnold in order to keep his career going in the right direction. I was listening to Jake Delhomme, the former Panthers quarterback, who was he's on their broadcast network, and he was a top quarterback for a stretch in the NFL. And he was saying, and I've heard this from others, that the Panthers, given their talent, sort of overachieved last year. So there are some people who look at Bridgewater as, you know, it wasn't as bad as it looked, but it certainly wasn't special. And the head coach obviously doesn't agree if he goes out and trades for Sam Darnold. So, hey, I think it's a good thing for the division, if nothing else, for the Bucks' perspective, if nothing else. They know they can beat Bridgewater. Todd Bowles knows all about Sam Darnold from drafting him with the Jets, so there's got to be a little bit of insight there, I would think. Especially with him, if he's going back and looking at Jets film, he knows some of the personnel. So I think it's all good. I'll say this about Matt Ryan, Ira. You know I love to throw you little trivia questions. What quarterback led the NFL in completions the last 2 years?
Steve, part of that, and I guess the answer is Matt Ryan. Is
correct.
Steve, he throws the ball 40 times a game. They don't have a running game. They don't have a Ronald Jones. They don't even have a Fournette. And the guy throws too often. Now, I will say this. That first half against the Bucks in Atlanta this year, he was masterful. They had a 17-0 lead. I think it could have been worse than that. He was picking the Bucks apart. But, Lee, why was he doing that? Because there was no pass rush. Zero in that first half. And he can still do that if you don't put any pressure on him. If you do, I think he's prone to mistakes. As far as Bridgewater, you know what? He might have gotten a raw deal in Charlotte because, Lee, facts are facts. McCaffrey was in and out of the lineup. Mm-hmm. He's their best offensive threat. Their offensive line's not very good. His weapons are kind of pedestrian. He's certainly not surrounded by the guys that Brady is. And, Lee, if I remember right, at least the first game against the Bucs, which was week 2, that was the game that Fournette clinched late in the game with that run. Lee, I think he completed 30 passes against the Bucs in that game. So this guy's not a bum. You know, he ain't Tom Brady. He's not Aaron Rodgers. But I think you could win with them if you got a good team around them, and I don't think the Panthers are good enough.
Yeah, it's like that game manager thing. I read this morning, and I do not disagree with this. I'm not saying this is accurate, but I don't disagree with it. This has all the makings of your buddy David Tepper putting his foot down and said, get a different quarterback.
I think that's right. And you've heard me talk about Tepper. He's a go-getter. I love those former hedge fund managers, Lee. I love them because they come into the league with like $800 million, you know, in the
breathing
bank.
Fire.
Yeah, breathing fire. And we're going to do this. And I think the first thing the guy said, Lee, at the league meetings when he was introduced, because I was there in Atlanta, first thing the guy said, he starts talking about playing games outside of Charlotte. We'll play a couple of games in Raleigh. You know, we'll move the training camp. I mean, the guy hasn't even signed his first check yet. And so you're right, Lee. He's the driving force there. You know, he looks around. He sees the Bucks with Brady. And, you know, he says the Bucks get all the buzz. We got Teddy Bridgewater. You know, nobody's talking about us. I don't think Bridgewater's the biggest problem, but Tepper is determined to upgrade there, and we'll see if Darnold beats him out.
Got to disagree with you a little bit, Ira, and since we know you are a new fantasy football guru, you know, I'm pretty knee-deep in the stuff at this point as well. What NFC South team had 2,000-yard receivers last year? That would be the Panthers, and they almost had a third with Curtis Samuel catching, I think caught about 80 balls for 800-something yards. So, yeah, they had weapons, but McCaffrey only played a few games, so we don't even know what they could have been. But, who knows? Who knows? It could be if Bridgewater could beat him out and have a good year, and they've got plenty of defensive talent, and they're not a team to, throw aside. But it's looking great for the Bucs. I'll agree with both of you guys. Or Lee didn't say it, but I know Ira did. Man, if they can't win the division this year, there's really no excuse for it.
Who was the other guy, Steve, with DJ Moore? Who was the other guy?
It was the first year there. Robbie Anderson had came over from the Jets and had, he was their top guy.
Okay.
Wasn't it Kansas City Bridgewater went crazy and he had him on the ropes?
Yeah.
I don't think
in
Atlanta.
That's right. It was Kansas City. You're right. I think the guy missed the field goal. The Panther guy, he hadn't missed a field goal all year, if I'm correct. And he missed like a 38-yarder that could have tied the game against the Chiefs, and they lost.
Some of that, Ira, is what I call lost decade disease. That's my new word for it. You know, the Buccaneers just got through the lost decade, and they changed their ways, and now they're Super Bowl champs. But all through the lost decade, we all dealt with the disease of Bucs officials saying, well, we lost a lot of close games, so it's going to make a big difference next year where we're right there. No, that means you're just not good enough. It doesn't mean that you're so close.
You're right. And here's another one. And you cringe when you hear this, Lee. And you used to hear it all the time at one Buck place. All the time. How about this line? The mistakes, they're all fixable. They're all fixable.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I love that. I love that.
Wasn't it a Shiano line or Lovie Smith? Here's what I wrote about this morning, Ira. And I didn't know this. During one of the many timeouts, the basketball game last night, and I always go to Twitter when there was a timeout. And I wasn't aware of this, but there's only three teams that have a longer drought than the Bucks from having consecutive non-1,000-yard rushing seasons from a running back.
Wow, that's a mouthful, Lee.
There's only three teams.
You're talking about the days of Doug Martin.
Well, I'd rather not, but yeah, he's the last 1,000-yard rusher. So there's only three teams that I believe either the Jets are tied with the Bucks, or the Jets are 1 year longer, having a drought without a 1,000-yard rusher. And Ronald Jones should have had one this year.
Right.
But Brady had to get his friend some bonus money, so that didn't happen. I think that drops this year for a couple of reasons. I think Rojo will be motivated. It's a contract year. Obviously, he had a good year last year. And there's a 17th game. So we're almost to the point where we have to start talking about 1,200-yard rushers, not 1,000-yard rushers. 1,000-yard rushers is That's outdated standard.
Absolutely. And, Steve, talking about storylines, you know, we got all summer to talk about it. But, Steve, you know, the storyline really is how do the Bucks deal with success? And that ain't a storyline, Steve, that we're used to talking about on this podcast. I mean, the dynamics have totally changed. Now they are the hunted. Every team they play, that will make that team's season. beating the Bucks, and complacency, you know, that Simeon Rice line about the 2003 team was still thinking about the confetti. And look, Lee mentioned it the other day. Arian said he's going to be on their ass all during training camp. That sounds good. Steve, that sounds good in April. We shall see. You do that over the top, and guys are, you know, guys are getting hurt on August 14th. And you don't want that. So, Steve, this storyline is something really fresh for those of us that don't go back to maybe, you know, 2003. There's a lot of new Buck fans since then, and they just think that the Bucks are going to go out because they got this talent. It doesn't work like that, Steve. You got to have the same drive. It's like Joe Buck's fan. You guys aren't sitting on your laurels. You're in the catbird seat. But instead, what are you doing? The Kemper's up till 3 in the morning filing 8 more stories. That's the way you got to approach.
Well, I appreciate that,
you're
Ira.
You're far off, Ira.
I appreciate that, Ira. But, I mean, we are playing against the Lions every week, so it's a little bit different. But I'll say this, Ira. Here's the thing that's different. Last year, I'm going to counter this by saying that they were the hunted last year. Anytime Tom Brady is your quarterback and you are the team with all the offseason hype, you are the hunted. Everybody went into playing the Bucks with an extra bit of juice because every guy on the line wants to sack Tom Brady. Every guy in the secondary wants to pick off Tom Brady. Everybody playing against the Bucks offense and all the stars. I think there's a lot of that they dealt with already, which is a good thing. So they're a little bit used to it. Now it comes back to the complacency. You've written about it. We heard you talk about your chat with Derek Brooks on that. We don't need to go there, but that falls in the hands of Tom Brady because he knows, and he's not going to allow complacency to get into this team, even if he has to override coaches and say, look, you're doing it wrong. We need to do this to repeat. And they should listen to him.
And along those lines, there's a reason nobody's repeated since Tom Brady was under center for the 04 Patriots. That's not a coincidence. And he almost repeated a few other times, but fell a little bit short, a little bit short. This guy's not new to the rodeo, Lee, so there's nobody that Buck fans would rather have in terms of guarding against complacency than number 12. And that's a good feeling of comfort going forward.
Well, Ira, one of the reasons earlier I said that the Bucks had Bridgewater as opposed to Brady, I don't even know if they're a playoff team.
Right.
Well, one of the reasons I say that, and I don't think it's even up for debate, that Brady changed the entire organization. Wasn't just offense, wasn't just the quarterback position, wasn't just the team, it was the freaking organization. And I think if the Bucks are able to repeat, I don't think we, let's put this, if the Bucks do repeat, a year from now, we'll be pointing at one player for that. And that guy, that's number 12.
Steve, I've never heard one guy win the Kemper over to the degree that Brady has. Not that Lee was skeptical of Brady, but, the guy was 42, whatever. And, uncharted territory. And now to hear Lee talk about Tom Brady, Steve, it's unbelievable.
Well, I can't wait to ask Tom Brady. This is the question I really am looking forward to asking him. Even Joel Glazer, Buccaneers owner last week, was very quick to admit that Brady changed the whole organization. He was the ultimate culture changer. Everybody has said it. I really would like to know if Brady believes that. If he thinks, and what he would say if you said, hey, Tom, everybody has said this, including the owners and the coach and the GM. What do you feel you changed? Do you even feel you changed the culture of the organization? I wonder what he would say, but who knows? We'll find that out.
Steve, mold, it can really do you in as a homeowner. And it's something you got to get on right away. And your first call has to be Florida's Elite Restoration. You call them before you call your home insurance company. You need them to come out and give you an honest estimate, an assessment. And the key word is honest. They'll tell you exactly what's involved and what you need to do. Florida's Elite Restoration, your first phone call for any mold concerns.
Florida's Elite Restoration.com. 24/7, you can call them 24/7. They're going to respond and give you that free estimate and assessment of what's happening. And they work with their partners that can help you out. They will be able to help you if you need it. The key is to not get ripped off. Florida's EliteRestoration.com. Your first phone call when you have an issue in your house, and this is serious business, any kind of disaster, fire, wind, mold, you come home, you find mold behind the washing machine, there's a leak, you got a problem, you call Florida's Elite Restoration immediately. Ira, I want to keep you in the NFC South since you started there with Sam Darnold. As Lee would say, I was wont to put my feet up and grab a Big Storm beer and listen to the Club Shay Shay podcast. And Alvin Kamara was on there the other day, and it was amazing, Ira. He was humbled. He was humbled by the Buccaneers. And they asked him about, you know, losing to the Bucs and how that went and all that. And Alvin Kamara said, I quote, "I think when one team is more prepared than the other, I mean, it's like, what can you do?" And he went on and said that they felt good about everything. And, you know, they heard all the chatter, oh, it's tough to beat a team once, twice, three times. But they really weren't listening to that. And they just went out there and he said, quote, "The Bucs were more prepared than us and had a better plan." And, yeah, that speaks a lot to Bruce Arians. That's the kind of language, Ira, that you can use when you're presenting Bruce Arians for the Hall of Fame one day.
Not bad, Steve, not bad. You know, from what Kamara is saying, Steve, I think it's an acknowledgement. Now, look, this might be an overstatement, but I think it's an acknowledgement, and he might be speaking for more than just Alvin Kamara on that football team, that the ground is shifting beneath their feet. Look, they've been division kingpins for 4 years. They've had some crushing playoff losses, and it wasn't like they played terrible against the Bucs in the playoff game. The Bucs just made more plays when it mattered, starting with that Winfield strip of Jared Cook. And by the way, Jared Cook is now a former Saint.
Yep.
You got to think that one play had a lot to do with it, because he's a pretty good player. You know, Kamara, he's an honest guy. Kamara, you know, hasn't done much against the Bucs. He scored some touchdowns, guys, the last two seasons, but he's played them five times since Devin White came aboard. And I don't think it's a coincidence that they've shackled them pretty darn good. And I think he's a reason that Devin White was drafted, and McCaffrey specifically. And the Bucs have done a very good job on both of those guys the last two seasons. You know, Kamara's a realist, Lee. I think he realizes the Saints are stagnant or have gone back a step, and the Bucs are riding an eight-game winning streak.
Eight-game winning streak. You know, a few months ago, we thought that was preposterous.
That's right.
And now Drew Brees is gone, and that's, I think, is part of the reality and part of the realism that Kamara's talking about. So, you know, beautiful. Let them start doubting. I'd love to see the Saints get off to a slow start, which would just be a fantastic thing. Have Jameis panic and start throwing interceptions left and right and controversy, and that would be just fantastic. Ira, you brought up Devin White, so I want to ask you and get your feeling on what kind of pull you think Devin White now has within the organization. And I bring that up because I was reading across the globe here, and I find out in a Texas newspaper that the slot cornerback from LSU, a guy named Kerry Vincent Jr., who's also a track star, a 100-meter superstar at the NCAA level and a bit of a freakish athlete, but just a sort of a strong slot corner, not much more than that, at LSU, he said that he is chatting daily with Devin White, getting counseling on staying motivated and all the stuff that it takes. Daily, not just, I talked to him a couple of times. And he said that he's talked to the Bucs, which means a little bit more this year because they're not talking to everybody at the combine because there was no combine. So they're not necessarily talking to every prospect like they did previously. So your thoughts, you think Devin White has enough pull to convince the Bucs that, hey, this guy in the fifth round or fourth round, this is the corner you want. He's a baller.
You know what? Will he be the deciding factor? Probably not. But he's got a voice. And, Lee, there's a real brotherhood down in Baton Rouge. There really is. Mm. And remember when White used to talk about Deion Jones, you know, and following that tradition, Lee, of the great linebacker, and then they end up both being in the NFC South, and they're both outstanding. I love Deion Jones. I'm not sure White hasn't already passed him. That tells you how far White's come. I love Jones. And so do the Falcons. They're not letting him go. But there's a real brotherhood. And guys that go into the NFL, they look out for the guys that are left behind in Baton Rouge. And, you know, look, White is not going to make the fourth round pick for the Tampa Bay Bucks. They're going to lean on their scout, as they should. But, you know, it puts a little star next to the guy's name on the draft board, Lee. And speaking of the voice that Devin White has, I think it's growing in importance and clout. And I don't really have a problem with it because the guy's passion is off the board. His skills are unquestioned. And the guy's the leader of that side of the ball. I mean, I don't think there's any question about it.
Yeah, I like what you said about the brotherhood with LSU. I really believe that. Quan talked about that often. I remember one time I said something to him about how LSU produces such good defenders and linebackers. And he looked at me and smiled. He goes, "That's why I went there."
Yeah. Boy, Quan, speaking of Quan Alexander, he's bounced around. You know, Buck fans thought they really had something special.
Yeah.
I mean, he was very vocal. He loved football. He was fast. But as we remarked on this podcast, he kind of had a long way to go in terms of discipline. And I think that's dogged him a little bit. And he seems destined, guys, to have a 10-year career where sort of nothing special. He was okay. And, you know, I don't think we would have said that, you know, 4 or 5 years ago.
Well, I agree. I'm going to say this because I think you're underrating Quan a little bit as a fourth round pick. I mean, he was very special as a fourth round pick, started right away, made the Pro Bowl. It's just been injuries. Injuries derailed the guy. I'm sure San Francisco would have kept him if he didn't get hurt. And then he got hurt with the Saints and he doesn't have a team now. He's off the top of my head. He's got to be 26 years old, but you're right. He'll probably be around 10 years, you know, talking about making plays as he is, which is his favorite phrase. Talented guy. He's just the injury bug. I don't think he'll ever get a big contract again.
Injuries and missed tackles. He had a lot of tackles, had several missed tackles. He's always in position to make a play, but he didn't always make a play. And to me, probably the turning point in his career was when the 49ers played the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. Early in the game, him and Pat Mahomes met at the goal line, and Mahomes ran him over. That shouldn't be. Not for a middle linebacker. You don't have a quarterback running over a middle linebacker, especially a guy like Mahomes, who technically isn't like a you would perceive to be Earl Campbell or anything.
And that don't sit well with a guy like John Lynch, Steve.
Mm. You know, look, last year, for example, Quan, I watch all these games on the condensed games every week. Quan took over as a starter in for New Orleans, an elite defense, playing really well. And classic Quan blows out his Achilles before the playoffs. And so who knows if he'll even play this year based on the late timing of that. But that's just been his career.
Yeah, he's had a lot of bad luck. No question about it.
I wanted to bring this up, Ira, because I thought it was a little bit funny knowing how many Donovan Smith haters are still out there. When I say haters, I mean people who just shake their head and say, "I can't believe we're paying this guy $16 million. And he makes those lazy looking plays. And I know he dominated in the playoffs, but it drives me crazy." There's still a lot of people like that out there who believed all the hype. He should move to guard. He should move to Canada, whatever. They just didn't like Donovan Smith. And, he did a podcast the other day. Ira was listening, and Smith, they asked him about the 17 games. And Smith made it clear. He said, "You know, after the Super Bowl, I felt like I could play another game. So I'm really not worried about it. I felt great. Felt like if we had another game, not a problem." And I think one thing is overlooked a little bit with this 17-game schedule is the psychological factor. Some players are going to have it in their head that they don't like it, and that they're going to wear down, and some teams that haven't been to the playoffs, you know, the media is going to ask some questions. Man, to get to the Super Bowl, you're going to have to play 21 games, first time in the history of the NFL. The Bucs already know they can go 20 and win, and not just win, but dominate and essentially win going away. So the whole roster knows that this team sort of is built to go 20 games at its peak effectiveness, and they all believe in the training staff that got them there. So I thought it was sort of a telling comment in a different kind of way.
That's an interesting point, Steve, because I think this extra game, which, you know, is adding, you know, another 6% to the schedule, if you want to do the math, you know, between 6 and 7%. But that sounds good on paper, but the effect could be as much mentally as it is physically in this respect. If you're going to whine about it and you're going to talk about it during the season as a detriment, as an obstacle, I think you're kind of beat before you even start, Lee. And the Bucks are very good about not making excuses for themselves. You know, they had that bye week, Lee. They had to play 12 games in a row to start the season. And nobody was really whining about that. As it turned out, you know, it was a fortuitous bye week in terms of timing because they had just lost 3 out of 4 and it gave them a chance to regroup. But Lee, they could have been talking about it, you know, in November saying, you know, we're gassed and they give us a week 13 bye week, you know, and it's not fair. This is a mature group, Lee, and I don't think they're going to be whining about a 17th game where I think some other teams, the more you talk about it, you know, the more you let it get to you. And Brady is at the forefront of that. He's not going to cotton to any mention at all of a 17th game as a problem, as an issue. So, look, Donovan Smith, I think, spoke for Buck Nation and a lot of his teammates. Whatever is put in front of us, we're going to handle. And as far as Donovan Smith's concerned, Lee, you've heard me say it. He's moved up a lot in my eyes. I had him in the middle of the pack, which is okay if you're a middle of the pack team. Well, I think he's better than that now, Lee. I think he's top 10. He certainly was down the stretch, and his durability is off the chart. And the Bucks would not have hung on to him and rewarded him, Lee. They break down the film like nobody's business. Joe Gilbert's no dummy. They don't reward Donovan Smith, Lee, without Joe Gilbert signing off on it. And Byron Leftwich and Arians, of course. And, you know, the guy has won over a lot of skeptics, and I think justifiably.
You think they actually went to Byron Leftwich? Tell me about Donovan Smith.
I think they might have talked to Devin White before that.
First about Donovan Smith. Yeah, there's still some haters out there that just can't imagine how the Bucks could even think of keeping him on the roster. Forget about starting. Just him on the roster. They despise him so much. I don't know why, but at any rate, but that leads me to something else about durability. Ira, if I told you that the Bucks front seven, of the players with the most snaps since 2010, the Bucks have three guys in the front seven who have logged the most snaps since 2010.
You're talking about defense, right?
Ndamukong Suh, Lavonte David, JPP.
Wow.
And wow. I just go back to what Parcells always said. Your best ability is your availability. Well, there's three guys in your front seven that are in the top five of the NFL for most snaps in the last 11 years. 11 seasons, I should say.
And, Lee, that reflects what I've said many times on this podcast. The thing that probably irks Buck fans more than anything else, Steve, and there's a bunch of it, you know, competition for things that I've said that irk Buck fans. But, Steve, they don't want to acknowledge it. I mean, the key players, by and large, have been healthy. And I'm not talking about O.J. Howard, gentlemen. I'm not talking about O.J. Howard. I'm not talking about Alex Kappa. I'm talking about the key players over the years, Steve. And the Bucks have been very fortunate in that regard. That's just a fact.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, Ira. Now, by the way, I just thought of this. That, you know, you were talking about your best ability is availability. You mentioned O.J. Howard, and that sprung to mind this. Peter King caught hell from somebody when he ranked the top 35 Bucks players. He did not include Antonio Brown, but did include O.J. Howard. Your thoughts?
35 players. I mean, that's pretty deep, Lee. I mean, that's counting the gunners that are going to replace Ryan Smith over here. Antonio Brown versus O.J. Howard. I got to give Brown the nod in that duel. I think O.J. Howard, you know, if he plays, it's a little bit of a boost. I don't think they're counting on him. That's a tough injury to come back from. Gronkowski showed you he's still got juice. Cameron Brait, I think, as he got utilized more, was effective. Who knows? They might draft another tight end. I mean, who knows? Antonio Brown played well down the stretch. Now, if they don't sign Antonio Brown, Steve, I'm not going to lose any sleep. But he played well down the stretch, played well in the Super Bowl. You know, at this point, Brown against O.J. Howard, I'm giving Brown the nod, Steve.
I hear you, Ira. We hit that on the last podcast about Brown. You know, there's been more talk about Brown. There's not much left to say. Either he signs or he doesn't. They've got something out there to him. And I don't see anybody else throwing deals his way. Maybe that'll change. Maybe Brown is content to wait it out until somebody else gets hurt and he can leverage his value. Maybe Brown is content to show up in September. I mean, he proved he could be very effective showing up in late October. So maybe he has no problem waiting it out. I have no idea, but it's not critical either way. And like we talked about, maybe the Bucks are waiting until after the draft in case the draft sends them to some sort of second round receiver that Bruce Arians is in love with. And you know, you just never know.
Right. Guy, we all know that has a relationship with some players, and often his intel is right on the mark. And he texted you and I over the weekend. He's getting information that don't fret about Brown. He'll be back. Now, don't know how, if that's going to happen or not, but that's what he's hearing from guys in the locker room.
My guess is Brown will be back. He has to have been humbled by this whole process. I mean, how could he not be? I'm not saying the Bucks don't want him back. They've made an offer, and maybe they can soften the offer and sweeten it. We don't know.
Well, there's a lot they can do, Ira. That it's just a question of waiting it out. I mean, they don't have that much salary cap room. The Bucks might have $4 million or so in salary cap room. They don't have the room. They can make more room. Brown might wait it out for them to renegotiate somebody else, play some more numbers games, you know, pick somebody out of a hat like a Will Golston or another veteran and make some more room for him. You know, Brown doesn't really know how far they'll go, you know, to get him on the roster.
But Steve, my bigger point is he has tested and is now aware of a very tepid free agent market for Antonio Brown. That's just the way it is.
That's what happens when you got a pending civil rape trial and you throw furniture off ledges and you blow up teams. Yeah. I mean, I would think he knew that already, but you never know. I don't know the guy. I don't know. I'm just glad that
of all the incidents you see players get into, maybe my favorite is tossing the freaking furniture off the balcony.
That sounds like Led Zeppelin 1974. That's what it sounds like.
I mean, if you believe the reports, which appear to be extremely accurate from the incident that he had right before he signed with the Bucks, we're only about 7 months away from the guy throwing a bicycle at a guard shack, you know, at his house. So, I mean, these things can be red flags, Ira, just throwing it out there. Hopefully Brown understood where he stands. You know, even Drew Rosenhaus dumped him as a client. I mean, that doesn't happen very often. So, you know, there's a lot there.
Steve, my point is, you know, even though I agree with you, he probably was aware that he's not going to be a hot commodity on the 2021 free agent market. You don't know till you're out there and you're available. And he was available, and he's been available for almost a month, and it doesn't seem like anybody really is making a good faith offer to bring him aboard. I think that's sinking in, and I think that's why he'll end up back with the Bucks.
You know, Brown came in halfway through the season, and he didn't start every game. Now I'm just talking regular season. I'm not talking playoffs. Brown had the fourth most targets of all Bucks offensive players last year in half a season. So that tells me, you know, he's the primary target on a lot of plays, which you generally don't do for a guy who's lousy. Or he's getting open all the time. Or
both. And Steve, perhaps most importantly, he's got Brady as an advocate. Unless Brady has abandoned them. I don't see any signs of that. So, and, you know, the reason that he joined the 2020 Bucks, we all know that. And I don't care what Arian says. It was a joint decision by, you know, Jason and myself and ownership. And we don't want to hear it.
All Brady.
And so Brady's still here. And, you know, Brady's still, if it's up to Brady, you know, he wants Brown as part of this team.
We talked about Ronald Jones earlier in the podcast, mentioning the 1,000-yard season situation. You know, there's a reason they targeted in Week 17. Antonio Brown got 15 targets. You know, they like the guy. It's just that simple in ultimately what turned out to be a meaningless second half of a blowout. So that's just the reality. But I just look at it as if Brown comes back, seems like he's going to be happy because this will be the only place that offered him decent money. And, you know, if he's happy, then at least it gives us a head start instead of him coming in all freaked out and doing Antonio Brown stuff. Guys, I wanted to ask you one last thing before we head out of here. Of course, the podcast is on various platforms. Ira, you did get that 600th subscriber on Podbean you were looking for. So now it's like 603, nice. And you got many nice thousands elsewhere. Our thanks to Bill Curry Ford, BillCurryFord.com, Tampa's first family of Ford. And of course, we talked all about the draft party April 29th. Big storm, Clearwater, big storm, though, of course, you don't need a draft party to go there and have a great time. Tap rooms in Odessa, Clearwater, Orlando at the Amway Center and Cape Coral, and Florida's Elite Restoration.com. That's where you head right now. Check it out. And so you know where to go when you have an emergency. That's your first phone call, Florida's Elite Restoration. Guys, with the draft approaching, Lee, Ira, I'm curious, what is your thoughts about the guys who sat out the 2020 college season? Do you hold it against them at all? Do you think it's the kind of thing where teams have to explore each guy individually to understand why they sat out and maybe dig deeper into why they took the COVID option and sat down? I've heard various stories from different players. It seems like they all have a different approach to why they sat out and what they learned from it. Do you not hold it against guys? How do you look at the film? What do you think about the guys who sat out and how you can, should, are able to evaluate them?
It's individual, I think. However, if a guy was on a team that was supposed to be damn good, that would be a red flag for me. Like you were expected to win. I'll give you an example. It was Chuba Brown. Is that his name? Chuba, this guy from Oklahoma State. He didn't sit out the season, but as soon as his team started losing, he bailed. And to me, it's either, you know, you play or you don't. And he bailed as soon as they started losing. That's it. I'm done. So that's a red flag for me right there. This Micah Parsons from Penn State. Penn State had a lousy season. They weren't expected to be a lousy season. But he opted out. And I'm like, well, you know, why did you opt out? Did you not think your team was going to be in contention? You know, I could see a guy, you know, like these guys in Miami, they opted out. No one expected Miami to be anything last year. So I don't blame those guys. But if you're on a team and, number one, you decide, okay, I'm going to play this season, I'm a team guy, then you start losing, like, I'm out. That's a red flag. And if your team was supposed to win, why did you opt out? It does raise some questions, but I think it's an individual basis.
Steve, I'll say this. This is an issue that should never be determined by public statements. And by that, I mean you're never going to find an NFL general manager or a scout in public, not in private, but in public, saying that they're going to hold it against the guy for not playing in 2020. That's not going to happen. It's not politically correct. The wrath of the naysayers will come down on anybody who dares to utter such a thing. However, the reality is that it could be a red flag in some situations. Steve, you mentioned delving a little deeper. I think they would delve a little deeper and find out the specific reason that the guy sat out the season. But to say it's no factor and the total evaluation of a prospect, I think that's very naive. But you're never going to hear it publicly, Steve. But I think it is a potential red flag.
I hear you, Ira. Just wanted to see what you guys think. I haven't even thought it through yet myself, but it is interesting as I listen to more and more draft prospects and interviews and, you know, hearing from guys who did it and why and just, you know, and just in general, you know, who knows? Like you said, though, Ira, it's never going to be public. And speaking of the not politically correct, Ira, I'll let you weigh in. I don't think Lee and I really have much to add. You know, Carlton Davis made some news on Twitter. He used the term gook in a Twitter message that was not directed toward Asian people. And he quickly apologized, said he didn't really understand what the word meant. He thought it had a different meaning the way he's heard it used in Miami. And of course, he was clobbered for it, national stories, etc. And the Bucks issued a statement and reminding everybody that Carlton Davis is big on their social justice committees, and he's aware and is a good guy and that kind of thing. So, Sage, your thoughts?
Well, Steve, I think it's another emphatic reminder that before you press the button on Twitter, you got to think twice. You got to think twice. Do I believe that Carlton Davis's explanation that he didn't realize that it was offensive? That sounds a little dubious to me. But even if it's dubious, he made a mistake. He made a mistake. He made an error in judgment. He has apologized, so we move on. But let's acknowledge that he did make a mistake. He has taken care of it. The Bucks have issued a statement. Move on. But the lesson to be learned, be careful what you put out there in the social sphere. It has ramifications. I'm glad that he has apologized.
Ira, I think it was Vern Lundquist. I could be wrong. May have been Al Michaels, but I want to say it was Vern Lundquist, who said the most dangerous item invented since the atomic bomb has been the enter button.
Wow. And, you know, Lee, to follow up on that, and you're great at it because you find these things instantaneously. And, Lee, by the time you delete it, somebody's got a picture of the original tweet, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I'll correct Lee a little bit and Vern Lundquist. I'll say the most dangerous button for you, Ira, is the pay button when you go to bigstormbrewery.com and you got your online order all lined up and you got four orders of tater tots and you hit the go button. It's not good for you, Ira. You got to think first.
And Steve, I don't think that's going to be an issue because I don't expect to hit the pay button during our draft party. How do you like that, Isbeth?
It is your annual time of year where you say, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, and walk out smiling when the great fans of Tampa Bay pick up your tab. All right. We appreciate everyone. We got another podcast coming this week, of course, presented by Bill Curry Ford.
Wait a minute, Steve. I don't want to end this podcast without bringing up this question. And I know you'll give me a straight answer. When I retweet the podcast and get it out to my 20,000 followers, I usually open it up by saying on the nation's most popular Buck podcast. We try to deal with truths on this podcast. Steve, is there a problem with me saying that, or is that a leap of faith?
Ira, you know, come on. We just talked about the politically correct Twitter police out there. If that wasn't accurate, everybody and their brother would be screaming you down and making fun of you and calling you a liar. Does that ever happen, Ira?
Only in my household.